It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown here, as I said, co-host and producer of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker, partner in crime for 17 years.
Always great to be here. Absolutely.
Good to have you here,
in our 18th year. Hard to
18th
believe.
18th is amazing. And Mr. Ed Rudell, how you doing, Daddy?
Happy Pi Day.
You know something? I didn't even know that was the case.
You know, I caught wind of it earlier in the week about, you know, the 3.1415.
And
not regular pie?
Not the regular pie, yeah. Not apple pie. Okay. You're not the...
I was going to put an order in for cherry pie.
Pie in my eye, yeah.
But my dad always used to say, you know, when somebody would say pie are square, and he'd go, no, pie are round. Brownies are square.
But it's only celebrated like this in the United States, because over in Europe, they put the year first? No, they put the month.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Year, by, month, and day.
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Right.
Yeah, just.
So it's really not that unique. It's just how we.
I tell you, only you are really the anointed nerd for this program. Good to have Shane Hamlin here with us.
Hey, how are you?
Glad to have you with us. I see you wearing a shirt there.
He's puzzled.
Extolling.
He's puzzled.
For autism, when we did we were supposed to do the dive.
Yes,
and they canceled it. Yes,
the plunge.
It was too cold for a polar plunge. yeah, I guess you know
it was bitterly.
I think it was the wind that really set it off. Yeah. It was really windy that day.
Yeah, that could have been dangerous. It could be dangerous anyway. But
well, you
really
you might
dangerous.
Not have wanted to get out of the water because the water would have been warmer.
Correct. It would have probably been nice.
Balmy.
Only the Detroit River water in that.
But we did raise a lot of money.
Oh, good.
Which is really the reason for doing it.
We're talking about the polar bear plunge that was supposed to have happened
to help autism. Yeah. Right?
Autism Special Olympics in Michigan. Right. Autism is one of the teams that I was a part of, and that was a great team, and Excellent. We raised a ton of money. In fact, I think out of all the teams in the Detroit plunge, I think we came in top five for raising money.
Wonderful.
And that's going up against large corporate
donors
teams.
As well. Right. That's excellent. Well, yeah. Hey, the other person who is with us right now, as he is every week, is Mr. Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Aaron Gobra.
Ah, that's right. We have a big green festival coming up, St. Patty's Day, right?
We do.
Matter of fact, I had a fight through the parade this morning in Royal Oak because they were marching down the street, taking it over, and everybody being a little green with Irish, no matter what
green
their
green after they drank the beer, too.
That's still going on right now. Hey, Mike, let's talk about some of the... by the way, Mike is the editor of MI Tech News. And you can find out more about that by going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and then scrolling down the page and clicking on MI Tech News. You'll find out more about all the titles, all the information there. But we're going to kind of do a little sampling of what you have there this week, Mike. And one of the things you have down there is that the ESD has named a permanent executive director.
Yeah, Robert McGee, who had the job as the interim boss starting in August, now has the job full-time, and I had the pleasure of meeting him just this week and doing an interview, which will appear in next week's newsletter, talking about what he wants to do with the group, and impressive individual. I really liked him.
Now, the ESD is the Engineering Society of Detroit, and that's a venerable organization. It's been around for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. And
since 120 years, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Something like that. Yeah, it's a really venerable organization that's been around, and especially with the auto industry in this area, has had some very illustrious members for a long time. Glad to hear that it now has a new director, and let's move on. Oh, I see that Robotics Day is coming up in Michigan.
Yeah, on April 9th at the U of M North Complex, which is where most of the science and engineering stuff is these days up there.
That's right.
And so it's going to be celebrating National Robotics Week, and they're going to have a lot of demonstrations there. If you've never seen these things, they're really crazy. and they're going to have demonstrations of flying, rolling, swimming robots, probably wrestling robots, who knows, right? So, and lots of people that are involved in the industry, the kids that are building these, of course, everybody these days are kids compared to us, right? So, but it'll be, I'm certainly going to be up there. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
I imagine Team Rush will be there. And we've had Team Rush on for a number of years.
Right,
and
from
last year, not only did they win the state competition, but they won the world competition. Right. They had competitors from other countries that came in, and they still won. So they hopefully they'll do a repeat.
And we had Christina Lee in here with us as well, talking about another program. And the kids are really getting into this as a way of applying what they learn in the science classes. So that's wonderful. That's going to be going on April the 9th, for those of you who are interested in robotics. And another headline there was that 53 teams are going to be competing in a rather interesting and tasty competition coming up in Lansing.
Yeah, I didn't realize this was so big in the state, but there's apparently 20 career and technical centers across Michigan that teach culinary arts. And it's not just, you know, how to cook. It's the more tricky part is how to manage the restaurant or come up with an idea that succeeds. I mean, restaurants have, if you look at the numbers of restaurants that fail in the first year, it's phenomenal, like 90%.
Wow.
So they have these schools. They're going to have 53 teams there competing. You know, a couple of days, one of the competitions will just be a Q&A and, you know, what's the safety issues surrounding this. But another part of it is on, you know, how to run a restaurant, how to do a business plan for a restaurant, how to do all that stuff.
You know,
quite exciting.
Some of us who have been watching those shows on TV with, what was the name of that chef who was the one who is always chewing somebody up.
Ramsey?
Ramsey. Yeah. That's a Chef Ramsey, right? So this is kind of like that on a bigger scale. Well, by the way, MI Tech News has not just these, we give these kind of as examples of the headlines that are there, but you have many things. You can, breaking news, webcasts, you'll find new products, entrepreneurs, quarters, cyber defense, so many different headlines. All of them delivered to you absolutely free from MI Tech News. Simply go to internetadvisor.net, scroll down the page, and subscribe. Thanks for being with us, Mike. Have a great week.
Thank you too, Foster.
Well, in the intro to the program, I said something about an apple a day keeping the doctor away, and I don't know if anybody else in this studio was addicted enough to watch all almost two and a half hours, I think it was, wasn't it? I think eventually of the Apple reveal of the iWatch and the new MacBook. So, by the way, let me just introduce again the people who were in our studio, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Shane Hamlin, and our very own gadget guy, Mr. Rick Broider, is here with us today.
I'm here.
I figured we had to have you in because of this enormous event that took place. Enormous, at least, in the sense that, and I, you know, afterwards I was thinking about this. What did I really see? You know, it's kind of like you're entranced by a really well-produced show.
Yeah.
But then you have to ask yourself afterwards, it's like a big bag of popcorn. You know, I'm feeling full, but did I really eat something there? Or was it mostly air that I got?
Yeah. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors from Apple, isn't it?
Wow. But I guess what we're going to talk about today is, was there any real substance to it?
Yeah.
And I think in terms of technology, there is. And that's where I'm interested to hear your input on there.
Well, I think, technology. Sure. And I think this was a big event for Apple because it was their official unveiling of a new product, which is a first. I mean, for a long time, I think the last new product from Apple was the iPad.
And right. So and now this was with the first watch, under Tim Cook, so that was important.
Yeah. Definitely. Now, the reaction has been fairly tepid, I think. To the Apple Watch. I think a lot of people are not wild about the price points. A lot of people are still questioning whether they want to have something that
you have to charge twice a day.
Yeah, or at least
twice
once a day.
Oh, once a day, or at least.
Well, the battery lasts 18 hours.
Right.
So at the end
of the day, just like with your phone, you throw your watch on the charger.
I'm sure that was a.
And I'm happy to, you know, at some point we'll talk about other watches that are competing.
But isn't that the problem has been? Was two things struck me about that is. That the event was billed as about the Apple Watch, like spring forward. Mm-hmm. So it was
right.
Like, oh, we're going to see about the... In the end, I didn't think... I'll see what your kind of poll, you guys. Did you think that the event was about the watch?
You starting with me?
Yeah, I'll start with you.
Well, you know, because I didn't watch it, really.
I'm embarrassed to say, I actually was traveling at the time, so I didn't get to see the event. And normally, I'm glued to my TV, and I watch the whole thing, or at least have it on in the background. So I didn't really get to see it firsthand, but all I... obviously I heard much of the fallout from
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
And so, yeah, I think it was kind of hard to put a pin on what exactly Apple was looking for there.
That's what, Shane, what were you thought?
Oh, no, it was totally about the watch, in my opinion.
You think
Oh, yeah. They're pumping that thing like you wouldn't believe.
I know. Not everybody had a chance to watch it. Okay. Did you have a chance to watch any of it?
I watched on and off. You know,
okay.
Come in, watch a little bit, step away.
Because it's a lot to watch.
Yeah. I mean, literally, a lot to watch. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
A lot to watch.
And you didn't get to see it. What was your impression that it was about the watch primarily?
That and the new MacBook Air.
Okay. And Gary, what was your impression?
I thought it was the watch.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't see it. But that's what I'd heard building up to it, and then coming away from it, same thing.
I think if you went through the presentation and timed out what was about the watch, you would probably find that that was only about a third of what was done there. The rest was about both the MacBook, the new MacBook that's out, the 12-inch, but also the technology underneath it. There was a tremendous amount of time spent about the keyboard and about the new trackpad they had and the Force Touch. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up. And then the other thing was the USB-C port, because it only has one port, and it's this new technology called USB-C. But that was what fascinated me, because I also came expecting to see this thing to be primarily about the watch. It wasn't.
What?
You know, it was funny. I came in 20 minutes late to it, and in that time, the first part, I listened afterwards to check it out, but the first part of it was HBO. Was talking about HBO, what's it called now?
HBO Go.
That's it.
Right.
And for $15 a month, you can get this. Now, without any cable subscription.
But you need an Apple TV for it. They have an exclusive for 3 months.
For 3 months.
Boy, nice job there, Apple. Wow.
Okay.
I can't believe they pulled that off. Meanwhile, they lowered the price on the Apple TV.
That's right.
Which is a surprising move for Apple, but long overdue.
Oh, yeah, they
can maybe now compete a little bit with the likes of the Roku and Chromecast and
Amazon Fire TV.
Yep. All of them. So it's long overdue for that move, I think.
Oh, yeah. But as an Apple TV user, and I have a Fire TV as well, the little dongle from Amazon, which is the Fire TV. I was waiting for them to do something good with the darn Apple TV, and they didn't.
Some sort of upgrade.
Exactly.
Yeah, next generation product. It's the same product that it has been since the beginning.
Yeah.
And granted, they've added a few channels here and there, but it's still the same little black box.
Yeah.
So it just kind of goes to prove that Apple can coast for as long as they want, and something as trifling as a price drop is still newsworthy.
Yeah.
You know, I like the Apple TV. I like it a lot. It's just that, you know, it's not very exciting.
I hate the little device they use for changing. It just
it's constantly slipping
out of my hand.
But at least you get a remote. You know, I miss with the Chromecast. I miss having a remote. I don't like using my smartphone for that. But you know, it is small. It's tiny.
Now, you know, I didn't watch that much about the Apple Watch. The Apple Watch. It's not called the iWatch. That's creepy. But
I watch what?
But I thought I read something a month or two ago that they were backpedaling on exactly how many sensors they were actually going to put on the back of it. Because do they really want to be responsible for monitoring people's blood pressure, temperature, and stuff like that, and relying on apps and worrying about lawsuits?
Yeah.
I mean, I read a couple different articles about that. So how many
I don't know.
So what is this device actually going to be able to monitor? Because it was, you know, for athletes, runners, I mean, that was one of the things, our audiences, they were targeting. So what is this watch going to be able to do?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I know there were some things they disconnected. Not disconnected, but they are not going to do.
The microneedle. They're supposed to.
Stop.
It's, you know, oops. To stop you smoking, right?
It's going to be the say path.
You know, it'll just give you a little injection every once in a while.
I leaked it out. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people are looking at the Nudge and a couple of the new really health-oriented bands.
Yeah, Microsoft's band.
And
yes.
That's right. It's called Band.
Band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Assembly Band.
And people, I know, everybody that I know that has one, first of all, they like the price point, right, under 200. Mm-hmm. But second of all, they love them.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Yeah. And these guys are not particular to any one. They would have picked whichever one was the best at the best value. And
well, that's
so
what
I was intrigued by the fact that they were so impressed with that. With the band.
That's why I think you're launching a watch. First, everybody wants to see how Apple's going to do it. And typically, I think in terms of classy devices, they look really classy, especially the bands and the way they worked and everything else like that.
There were so many to choose from.
Yeah, so many to choose
from. And that was the first time. My wife is not a tech, is doesn't like technology at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first thing. No, that was the first thing she said, and I've never heard her say this. Is I want one of those.
Oh,
and
really?
I said, what?
Did she want the $10,000 gold one?
Of course. She's seen the one with this wrapped, the way it wrapped, and the magnetic. And she goes, I want one of those. I go, really?
But there's something to be said.
But again, they weren't the first to do that.
No.
Moto 360, you know, you can, I don't know how many options there are with the Moto 360 watch. Mm-hmm. And but Apple somehow gets the attention.
Wasn't
and,
that true?
Maybe does it better. I don't know.
With the iPhone, that there were other phones. Well, the Trio. I was using a Trio before that when the iPhone came out. And it seems to be their genius at Apple of doing what somebody else is doing out there. But doing it a way that...
the user interface is just better.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And they massage the design to perfection, I think.
Right, exactly.
So I want to make the point, though, that, you know, I think it's... I said this a while back, that I think it will take Apple to make the concept of a smartwatch mainstream, to make it accepted, to make it desirable, to really introduce people to what it is and what it can do for them.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think there are at least a couple products on the market already that do a very good job.
Like what?
So first of all is the Pebble, which they beat Apple to the punch by a couple of weeks with the new announcement of the Pebble Time, which I love the name of because, you know, first it's like Pebble Time. Pebble Time. But also because it's a wristwatch. You know, it's designed to be a watch, I think, maybe not first, but at least is a big part of the equation. But it'll do these other things for you as well. And I've always liked the Pebble's kind of simplicity and the fact that it doesn't try to over-engineer something as basic as a watch. It just gives you notifications and a few other bells and whistles. The other, and the watch that I'm wearing right now and that I have been wearing for a few months now, is the Martian Notifier, which, as I'm holding up here for all the world
to see,
that's
a good-looking watch.
Looks like a watch.
Hold
first.
It closer to the microphone.
So everybody can see it.
Yeah. We'll put an image of that on
sure, it looks like a watch first, and it's a nice-looking watch. It comes in different colors, but it has a little OLED screen along the bottom that when you get a notification, a text message, a phone call...
All right, Rick?
Yes.
We'll talk more about that in just a minute. Coming back. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'll thank Rich Luzinski, who's our engineer behind the board there. Thanks, Rich. We are looking at some of the things that happened with the Apple Watch this week. And my contention is that the big reveal of Apple was not really about the watch. It was about so much more. We're going to talk about some of the other technologies that I think really, in many ways, took up more time at the presentation. But I cut you off in the middle of your conversation. We have Rick Broider in studio, who's our gadget guy, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you in today was to talk about both the watches and some of the other technology that were there. But you were talking about your Martian watch.
Yeah, I was so excited, I couldn't stop. Yeah, so I've been wearing the Martian Notifier, and I was wearing the Pebble for quite a while, and then the loaner unit that Pebble was kind enough to send me, they unkindly wanted me to return. So I decided I'd wait for their next generation Pebble Time. But in the meantime, I'm wearing this one called the Martian Notifier, which is, I think, very elegant. And
It is a very nice watch. It's
little
black.
Thick, maybe.
Yep.
Yeah, but so the things I love about it is that it's not overcomplicated. It's just a watch that has a little screen along the bottom, and when you get a text message, you get a phone call, the watch vibrates to let you know there's an event, and then you look at the screen at a quick glance, and you know now, is this something I need to pull my phone out of my pocket to attend to, or can I just leave it be?
So it's more of teasing you or telling you about something that's happening and seeing better elsewhere.
True to its name, it's the notifier.
That's
right?
It.
And believe it or not, it sounds very simple, but it's such a time saver because it just saves me having to go to my pocket and pull my phone out all the time to see what it is I'm missing and whether I need to take
And you
call.
Do a lot of communication on your phone throughout
tons,
your day.
Tons.
Right.
Yeah.
Would that work for you, Gary, to have something like that? That was just a notifier, or would you want more content on the watch?
I would want more content.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the notifier's great. It's just, you know, how much would I pay for something like that?
Yeah.
And it's probably not
how much
enough.
Would you pay for something like that, Gary?
So
the notifier, I think, lists for $129.
Okay.
So already very inexpensive relative to a lot of what's out there. And if you shop around, you can very frequently find it for under $100. So it's very affordable. That being said, the low-end Pebble is $99, so there is some competition
Shane,
there.
You wear a watch?
And the Pivotal Living that I was wearing for quite a while.
What is that?
Pivotal Living... you know, it's $12 plus $3 of shipping and handling, so $15.
What does it do?
It monitors steps, mileage,
more of a health
burn.
Monitor.
Okay, but it doesn't pair with your phone in any way.
It doesn't pair with the phone.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Hey, Shane, do you use
You know, I used to. I'm on and off. I'm with the trend because I wore my watch for the longest time, and then maybe about a year ago, my daughter said, you know, Dad, the watch isn't really kind of cool anymore. And I said, really? She goes, no.
Shamed your watch right off your wrist.
And I said, okay. So I took it off, and I haven't worn it since. I mean, you know, you get the hipster down that wears a watch.
I was in a meeting or presentation, and there were probably 80 people in the room. And the question was, who here's now wearing a watch, right, anymore? And four or five hands went up.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the point was, when we were talking about SCADA and what would happen in the event of a big electrical pulse that would wipe out some of the communications, and they'd say, so the rest of you, if we had an emergency, would not be able to tell time.
That's right. Yes.
And these people will become our new leaders. The wristwatch wearers.
No, I just have to be stronger than him.
We've been watching too much Walking Dead. What were you saying, Ed?
I just have to be bigger than he is, and I'll take his watch.
Ed, do you wear a watch?
No.
That's interesting. I still wear them, and if there was an EMP out there, I wouldn't worry about it.
And I stopped wearing a watch when I started working for a company where 24/7 really meant 24/7. Really. I mean, I would work 8 hours, and then I'd have to go home and then come in for another 8 hours because I got paged and working weekends.
That's interesting.
It's such a trend now. I mean, these flex hours, everyone has on a different hours of the day isn't the same as it once was, you know? And I've got a natural act for telling what time it is just naturally. I don't know if it's from the scouts or all the years in the scouts, but I can just be outside and I can kind of sense about what time it is always. And it's something that's always been built in.
Yeah, I have that problem too. It's dinner time.
My wife thinks it's kind of freaky, but
no. Hey, go ahead.
So I want to just one last thing about the notifier that's special about it, not just the price, but the battery life. You know, the one thing everyone's complaining about with the Apple Watch, and I think rightly so, is that you got to charge it pretty much every day. The notifier has like a rated battery life of a week. This thing goes for a couple weeks, honestly, before I have to charge it again. And not only that, when I plug it in to charge, all I'm charging is the little LED display.
LED screen, right.
The watch itself has its own watch battery that goes for a year.
Yeah.
So even if the regular notification system dies, I can still tell time, something that no other watch can match.
So,
I love that.
Yeah, one of the things I think this underlines is that there's a lot of watch competition out there. Mm-hmm. So the Apple Watch is going to have to be doing something newer, better. Now, one of the things I saw, and I want to go jump off the watch for a minute, because really the rest of the presentation was about the technology behind the MacBook that came out. But one of the things that they were talking about is if you pay $10,000 for the gold one, are you going to be paying for version 2 in a year, coughing up another $10,000? Yeah, some of the billionaires who will buy this will do that easily. But not the rest of us. Okay. Now, I want to move on to some of the other technology. Oh, before I do that, by the way, you mentioned the Pebble watches. Fascinating. The new Pebble watch is out. They still have 13 days to go on their Kickstarter campaign, and they've already raised $18 million+. Their goal was $500,000, and they have $18 million right now in the kitty.
And one of the incentives of that, of course, is that they actually get the product at a discounted rate for pledging the money, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, among other things. And the watch, by the way, is this Pebble Time Steel. It's a very beautiful watch.
Looks nice.
It looks very nice. Okay, the other technologies, and if you watch that Apple presentation, this was the case. It was like an iceberg. The rest of the iceberg was about the technology behind the MacBook itself. 12 inches, Retina screen on it, okay, was a big deal. A very small device, but beautiful, weighs 2 pounds at most. But, you know, there are other stuff on the market, et cetera, you know, that is out there probably. Windows, laptops and others that are light and can do that kind of thing.
Well, the Ultrabooks.
Yeah, the Ultrabooks. Mm-hmm. What struck me were three technologies that came out of this, and I'm interested in seeing your reaction to this and what you think the future of this is. One was called the Force Track Pad, where they have a huge trackpad on this thing, not the usual, like I have a MacBook right here, and it was about two times this size. That takes up most of the space where the keyboard is. It was run by this taptic response, they call it. In other words, under the keyboard that I have now, you can feel there's a little give on one side or the other. It's hinged underneath. The new keyboard doesn't have any hinging at all. There's no movement in it, but when you touch it, it has this called taptic response, which is an engine underneath that makes your brain think that it is actually pushing on something. And I watched videos where they had people randomly coming up and saying, what do you think? Do you think this is hinged? Oh, yeah, sure, it's hinged. No, it's not. But it now, that's one thing that I think will be having applications, and for instance, gaming, I would imagine, on some devices. The other thing is they had this keyboard utility where the keyboards usually were working on this scissor technology where the key sits on top of like a scissor and it collapses one side or the other. And as you notice, there's a little wobble on my keyboard when I hit a key. It goes back and forth. With this new one, they're going to the butterfly mechanism. And just quickly, what that means is there's no wobble. It just goes up and down, and it's completely solid movement. They've been able to make the keys bigger because of that, and each key has its own LED on this. So that's a huge difference. And the last one, and the
I'm
one...
I'm paying for 56 LEDs. I'm kidding.
Yes, you are.
Go ahead. Well, a backlit keyboard is not a new thing at all.
No, no. I don't know if this technology is new, but the LED in each one, but apparently the key stroke itself, however, is different, and on a very small area, it has allowed them to make the keyboard even bigger,
And keyboards are very important.
I think you've actually now just transitioned to a techie.
Or a fanboy.
Because I'm looking, I'm looking at Motley Fool, right? and what they care about, they're pretty technical, but when they do a review on a product, it's all around what value is it to the customer.
That's exactly what I'm asking.
And there's four sentences on the new MacBook, and none of them talk about
the
technology.
Okay.
So they pan the technology. Yeah, it'll go into a lot of different things eventually, but you know, what does it matter, I think, is what they're saying. So then I went to CNET, right?
Mm-hmm.
CNET doesn't list those technologies either. They didn't seem to be important.
At the time that they were doing, at least the ones that I was reading after having watched them, what was interesting was that Apple spent a tremendous amount of time with videos explaining all of this technology. See, that was what struck me about this. Mm-hmm. With this whole presentation, it wasn't about the watch. It wasn't even about the laptop. They spent an inordinate amount of time talking about the technology behind the keyboard,
how innovative they are.
That's
what they wanted. I think that's what they wanted to do, is they wanted to say, hey, you know, we're working on technology too. We're not just not this, you know, this iPhone, you know, iPhone company. We have guys that can do some technology and change things to make things better. And that's kind of what I got out of that. That's what they really want everyone to think.
Yeah, but Gary, you're saying essentially that the economic world is kind of saying ho-hum.
Yeah, and even CNET, you know, put it down kind of in the also-ran column.
That's interesting. I want to talk about this last technology, and Ed, I'm interested in your response to this, because this is this new USB-C. In other words, there's only one port on this thing.
You mean I got to buy more cables?
Well, we'll find out in just a minute as we return with the Internet Advisor. Hi, this is Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Shane Hamlin, and Rick Brunner with us as well. And Rick, by the way, before we finish this up, I want to find out, since you're the gadget guy, what we've been talking about, this Apple MacBook, the new one, 12 inches, etc., which actually was more important, I think, in terms of the amount of time and the launch on last Monday than the Apple Watch. But you've got a favorite one, and I want to have you talk about that in just a little bit. Getting back now, and I said before, we're talking about the launch and what was important there. One of the technologies, the final technology that they displayed, was the one kind of had everybody scratching their head. This was this USB-C connector. In other words, there are only two connection points on this new little laptop. One is for headset jack, and the other is for something called USB-C, which is a brand new way of connecting that apparently will give them the ability to charge through it and to connect to other devices.
It gives them the ability to charge us as well for some extra
there you go.
Connections.
$79 is what you're going to need. Now, it will come with a cable that will allow you to charge the laptop. And it has on one side USB-C, on the other side it has a standard USB.
But
I think
MagSafe is no more. Is that correct?
MagSafe is gone.
They got rid of MagSafe. Which
I didn't realize
because that was
that.
So
gone.
Cool.
Gone.
That. FireWire. They don't have a FireWire.
No FireWire. No FireWire. Not 400 or 800.
So the osmosis maybe.
You just wave it in front of an electrical outlet, and it will charge.
That's all I need.
That would be great.
Sometime we're gonna have to talk about this. There's a brand new technology out where they use infrared light to charge things.
Ooh.
Have you seen that, Ed?
Yeah.
Have you seen that online?
Yeah,
we'll have to talk about that sometime. That in the future, you'll be able to simply put your device underneath this infrared light, and it will charge the device. We've got to talk about that
later.
It will
cook a hamburger, too.
Right, exactly. And any other exposed skin?
Yes.
No. Okay, so there's no power connection anymore, no MagSafe or anything else. All of it's accomplished through this USB-C plug now, which can handle power, yeah, and it can handle throughput of data, et cetera. Okay.
Yeah, 20 volts now.
Now, the question is, have they, again, revolutionized the industry? They tried doing it with the lightning cable, and that didn't seem to take off.
And yet we're stuck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
We're stuck with lightning.
Or as Gary was saying, you know, you've got to pay $79 now when you buy this thing, in addition to get this hub, and the hub then will allow you to put in HDMI, the video connection, a USB 3.1 first generation connection, which will allow you to get data from any kind of other older USB, it's backward compatible, and then it has a USB-C connection on it as well, so you can then go and have your thing powered through it as well, okay? Are they setting the mark? Are they setting the bar with a new technology here? Or are they just, in essence, in a very fancy way, cutting themselves out?
You know, I'm not a Mac guy myself, so you can take this with a grain of salt. I love the idea of the new port. I just don't love the fact that it's not a traditional USB port. So all your USB gear that you have now, sorry, can't use it unless you spend extra
$79
for this hub, which to me is Apple being just like Microsoft saying that here's our Surface tablet, the replacement for your laptop. Keyboard is extra.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit like thumbing their nose at their customers. Right?
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, USB-C was one of the standards out there that was, you know, it was USB 3.1 or USB-C. You know, IEEE was like, which one are we going to standardize on? This was one of the contenders out there. Unfortunately, USB 3.1 is the one that's been ratified. C, although it's compatible, it's sleeker looking, but it's not backwards compatible. You know, with the physical electrical connections like 3.1.
I guess the question is, what do you think, Shane? Is this the with everything getting smaller and lighter? Is this like the wave of the future where you don't need to have a whole bunch of connections? You only have this one?
Yeah, I mean it's. Smaller isn't, I mean, who cares how small it is? As long as it's compatible with all my other devices, that's all I care
about.
There
you go.
Well, but I care how small it is. But
it really, are you worried about it being a quarter of an inch or 3/8 of an inch? I mean, does it really make a difference?
Yeah, I think they should just do it wirelessly anyway.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, that's what this is pushing it toward, is kind of a wireless future in some ways. I guess it remains to be seen, because they certainly have left a trail of discarded technologies as they've gone forward.
And
we're really not. Shane was showing me the technology behind this. I mean, the processor, the motherboard is only about the size of a dollar bill. And everything else in this thing is
it's all battery, right?
It's all battery.
Yeah. They've terraced these thin batteries in order to fit into the unique spaces. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's not a very powerful processor, and the video card chain
is bad.
Yeah, it's junk.
Well,
but if you want to do any type of gaming on it, of course you're not going.
That's not the design of the game. This is right. It looks like, who would buy this, Gary? Like, you know, you've traveled in business for a long time.
Who would buy it?
All the Mac faithful will buy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where's Cal when we need him? Cal will buy it.
Where is Cal when we need him to abuse him?
There's other products that are even thinner and lighter and.
In terms of laptops?
Not faster and stronger.
Yeah, but just not Apple compatible. Right? They're not Apple's. Yeah. This is Apple trying to catch up again.
So maybe they have come up with this lovely technology that nobody was going to buy, because it's also pretty expensive. I forget the starting price in it, but it's like $1,200 some odd.
Yeah, all the way up to $1,600, $1,600.
Yeah, $1,600 with a faster processor.
I guess. It comes with
256 hard solid state drive.
Solid state.
Mm-hmm. With a solid state drive.
Well, if you want to shift into cheapskate mode for a second, we can actually talk about a great thing to compare. There's a new Ultrabook, Windows powered Ultrabook, that's been kind of burning up the internet the last month or so from the company Asus. Mm-hmm. I always want to say Asus. That is called the ZenBook UX 305. Am I getting that right, Foster?
305 FA-USM1.
Okay, so this
Zen
and,
book, in other words,
right? So
somebody
this and
help
a new there's a new Dell XPS 13 that's also been getting lots of great buzz. But this this Asus is amazing because it's priced at $699. It's really sleek, really thin. It's like 2.5 pounds. Comes
with just a half pound more than this other one,
right? And it's just very thin. Comes with 256 gigabytes of solid state storage,
okay,
which is amazing at that price point.
Yep.
And it's just and it's actually out of stock everywhere you look now. It's sold out. I think it's first run. You can't even buy it at this point. But this is really cool. I mean, it's a next gen processor. It's 8 gigs of RAM. It's pretty much everything a mobile users most mobile users are going to need for $699, which is a great deal. So that's very likely my next.
Are you extolling a Microsoft product?
Well, it's how can you fight the bang for the buck? You just can't. You can't.
But you know all that we've been. I got my computer from. From work, which had exactly what you said. Now it's just a little bit bigger than what you'd said it was, but it's 2 years old now.
Yeah, right. So time for something new.
8 gig of RAM. 256.
But how much was it?
Gig. Well, we bought it in quantities, okay. But it wasn't much more.
Yeah. All right.
$699 is the Asus ZenBook. And there's a bunch of other numbers behind it. The Signature Edition. Oh, Signature Edition, I think, means no bloatware.
Yeah, that's so you can
and
get that,
is
that from
nice.
Microsoft, which
is,
again, makes me laugh. It's like it takes Microsoft to be able to sell a computer that only has Windows on it and not all the other garbage.
Like Lenovo?
Like Lenovo, like Asus, like Toshiba, like anybody else. Like, why can't the vendors do like Microsoft? Don't get me started.
Well, and that was a problem with the Lenovo and that...
Superfish,
yeah.
Well, I mean, the reason why is that vendors pay them to put on there.
Yeah, I know.
Reduce
it's
the cost.
Money for them.
You know, reduce the cost of the product selling it to the customer, supposedly.
So, I mean, that's probably one thing I guess I would say to watch out for is try to get one of these special signature editions because they have just the software on there.
Definitely. That's
okay. By the way, we'll post this on our homepage as well, something to look at. Anyway, folks, if some thoughts that we rambled through in this hour in terms of the big Apple reveal, was it a big reveal? Some technology in there along with a watch and a lot of, we'll see what comes of this. Gary, your comment about Motley Fool watching the economic value of this thing, very interesting that they're kind of, nice show, but let's keep on going.
Yeah.
All right, hey, hour number two is coming up. If you can stay with us, or if you're listening to us here on our podcast, we got another hour coming in which we're going to be talking about some of the questions that we've received during the week and some of the answers we have for those questions, and hopefully we'll get to talk with some of these people as well. Thank you for being with us, and thanks, Rick Broida, for being here as well.
Thank you, my pleasure.
All right, Rick Broida, who is our gadget guy and also the cheapskate, Gary, Ed, and Shane, you stick around. We've got a great hour coming up. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the program. And, well, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Today, we should have no doctors. Well, we invite all doctors to listen in, but won't need any at least, because we're going to be talking a lot about the things that were revealed at the Apple reveal this past week. And it's a whole lot more than just about the Apple MacBook and an Apple Watch. A lot of very interesting things about technologies that could appear elsewhere as well. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Thank you for joining us. If you've gotten our podcast, this is kind of where the rubber meets the road. This is our specialty, and that is we have questions that have come to us by email, and we have put our minds together, and we're going to be trying to answer those questions. And as a matter of fact, we're going to look forward and see if we can get a few of those people on the line with us, too, and talk with them about the questions they answered. Well, then, coming up next. Gary, since this is our 18th year of doing this, one of the ways that we started was by answering listeners' questions, right?
That's right.
And that has been, for us, I think, one of the favorite parts of our program, and it usually has been this, the second hour, where we get to take questions that have been provided to us. Mm-hmm. And by the way, on times when we are preempted, for instance, like by a sporting event on our home station, WJR, then what happens is we have people all throughout the week who are sending us emails. And by the way, a great way of doing that is simply going to internetadvisor.net and clicking on the Contact Us button and then sending us your question. And during the week, Ed, you make a point of helping out by answering a lot of those questions.
I do. And don't mind the spelling mistakes because I'm usually speaking into my phone.
That's why it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't spell check wonderful?
Yeah, it should be my voice check. I have that Midwest accent.
Whatever the trick is, you have some really interesting spellings and content to that.
And if you want to see my spelling mistakes, just go to our Internet Advisor website and ask us a question.
But spelling mistakes aside...
But the answers are good.
The answers are good. Yes, exactly. And I know, Shane, you have helped out with answers as well.
Yes.
So we're going to be looking at some of the questions that came on during this last week and some of the answers we gave. And if we can, we'll talk with some of the people there. But Shane, we have Shane Hamlin with us in studio along with Ed Rudell. Shane, you have been a gamer for a long time. But had your own program at one point on radio about gaming. And there's something I saw this week that kind of shocked me. Mm-hmm. I guess we've talked about malware and the ability that it has to screw up your life, but there usually are ways of getting around it. You can go through with malware bytes and combo fix, and Ed, you've had a number of tools for that. But I saw this thing about CryptoLocker and ransomware that absolutely freaked me out because there's no cure.
There is no cure. I mean, it's the end-all of viruses right now.
And it's hitting gamers in particular.
Yeah. They're hitting gamers because they're the ones out there looking for... backtrack a little bit. A lot of games nowadays, back in the day, you wanted a game, World of Warcraft or EverQuest or whatever you were playing, Star Wars. You'd go to Best Buy or wherever you were going to go, GameStop, and spend $40-$50. You bring the physical game home.
Right.
And you pay a monthly fee of, $9 a month. Mm-hmm. And that gives you all the live content and updates and everything on this multiplayer game online. Well, it's changed now. The new fad of gaming is free-to-play, where it doesn't cost anything to play these great titles, but they have what they call microtransactions. So if you want that little bit better armor, $2 will get you that better armor.
Or a different weapon.
Or a different weapon, or experience regen potion, or, those kind of little things that help you along with the game. Now, the average player that doesn't want to pay for those things can still earn those things. They just have to put in the legwork to earn them like the old way. Now you can just buy it. So what they're doing is you've got a lot of these kids that don't want to have to go out there and mine, 40 blocks of granite, or 4,000 blocks of granite. So they look online and, I can buy it for $1. Well, the problem is it's not the right site. It's a ransomware site. It's a virus site. They go to it and they get this ransom CryptoLocker virus. And it's hitting all these little microtransactions. It's not coming from the particular legitimate sites. It's not coming from Steam, or it's not coming from World of Warcraft, Blizzard, or Microsoft with Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
They're going in and doing a search for Minecraft granite blocks, and the first couple of results are coming are those ads for those viruses.
Apparently, and this is talking about something called CryptoLocker and ransomware. Now, talk a little bit about what that is and what it does.
Once you either go onto the wrong website or open an email that you weren't supposed to, and you get infected with this particular ransomware virus, it locks your system down. As soon as you turn it on, you're going to see this big alert that's going to come up and say, "Hey, we've taken over your system. You've been infected. If you want this content back, call this number, go to here and do this." They give you the steps. It is going to cost you $350 or whatever the price is.
And when you do that, do you get it unlocked?
Well, there's...
Or is that this part of the scam?
Well, here's the thing. I think sometimes it does. I think sometimes you can get your stuff because what it will do is perpetuate the myth that, if I pay, I will get my stuff back. And you'll see online, you'll see some people that have paid and did get their stuff released.
Mm-hmm.
But then most cases, probably not.
No, it's almost like extortion.
Yeah.
They keep on hitting you for that.
Yeah, I mean, if nobody gets their stuff back when they paid, it'd go pretty quickly through the internet. Oh, don't pay it. You're not going to get your stuff back anyway.
Right. So is there, Ed, we've talked about malware bytes and other things, combo fixes to cure this. Is there anything like that that you know, we've talked about before for this?
There's nothing.
I don't think there's anything because basically the user is probably unloading a zip file or a pack file or a RAR file and
just clicking
it.
On something.
Yeah, they're clicking on it and basically they're running it and it's supposed to install somewhere and Windows may even be saying, "Are you sure you wish to run this underneath this privileged account?" Mm-hmm. And basically they're saying, "Yeah, you know, ignore that. Go ahead." And then
go ahead. I want that.
Meanwhile,
I gotta
it's running
that.
In the background.
And it's so bad that when we get it in our store, that it will actually jump network computer to computer.
Ouch!
It'll go on your thumb drive, and you don't have to. As soon as you put your thumb drive in one of those machines, instantly transfer to that thumb drive. And the second it infects so quickly.
Oh, it's almost like some Stuxnet kind of thing.
I mean, it's bad. It's really bad.
Yeah, actually quite a bit different, but you're right.
Yeah, but I mean, in the sense of going, as you said,
we have to disconnect, start pulling network cables and disconnect, shutting down the routers. And
oh, you've really had that happen?
Oh, yeah. Well, we first started encountering it, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. When we come back, we're talking about Shane Hamlin about this crypto locker ransomware. And if you go to our homepage, we'll have an example there from an article about this of what that looks like. I want to talk about quickly what you can do to help yourself avoid this when we come back. And then we'll talk about our first question that was provided for us from Irina, somebody we happen to know, when we return in just a moment. Thank you for tuning in to our podcast here and this second part of our program. I'm Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Shane Hamlin are in studio. Just quickly, Shane, before we go to our next question, I want to ask you, we talked about this crypto locker where it's called ransomware. It literally locks down your data. You can't get rid of it. There's no way of scrubbing it. Is there anything you can do about it?
Yeah, the only defense is or the only offense, I guess, or no, the only defense against is a good offense is backing up your data. Okay. Right? I mean, that's the only way to protect it 100%.
Cuz essentially you're going to have to reformat.
Yeah, you do reformat and you lose all your it's so funny because it looks like your data's there. You can see your files. But as soon as you go to open them, it says you don't have permission to open.
Am I liable?
So Shane, what about like the programs? If you're reformatting, you got to load all your programs as well.
You have to reload, yeah.
And a lot of times we don't get media. So when you're downloading a program, what's the best practice?
Well, I mean, for instance, the number one program you're going to have to reload and download is probably your Office, Microsoft Office. That's going to be the number one. Mm-hmm. Well, nowadays you create a Microsoft account for that cloud download. So all you'll have to do is just re-log in. Re-sign into your Microsoft account, just dump it back down. That's all.
What about some of the games that people use?
Games, I mean,
some of them are free, as you said, but sometimes they're not free. And there's other things that, you know, you may buy, even if you're not paying all that much for them anymore. Do you have to rebuy them? Or what would you do when you it says download and install, but there's a stop in between, right?
Sometimes this ransomware will not affect those install files.
But you're still reformatting, though.
Correct, but you can grab. See, when I work on a machine that has this virus, I know certain things are gone. I know pictures are gone, and videos are gone, and music is gone, and data documents are gone. But a lot of time, it will leave the actual zip file, executable, or if I've downloaded Photoshop and I have it still in the folder, that's still clean, and I can sometimes grab those and back them up, even with the infected. Okay. To recover those.
Do you suggest having somebody help you put it back on, though? It sounds like pretty...
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not one of those... unless you're just going to, you know, throw your factory recovery disks in and do it yourself, it's not one of those things. If you've got some stuff in there, like old... We get this all the time. Like old guys that have retired from the industry but still think they're CAD designers, still have that old, you know, CAD 1.0 on there, and they'll never get it back, but they want it. Because once it's gone for them.
Right.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, it is. I mean, when something like this strikes... You're gonna lose something. Hmm.
So I know that sometimes when you download a program, what I'll do is I'll download it, and then before I install it, I'll run that download file off to and back it up to a hard drive somewhere that I disconnect from the computer. And the reason I do that is sometimes when you then install, it opens up the file, and instead of just all reading, it writes back.
Yeah.
It says, basically, you've used the install. So I've installed it on one computer. Otherwise, you download it, and you could install it on a whole bunch of computers if you were to pay for it. So they stop you from doing it once once you've actually installed it. So I back up before I install.
Ah.
So between the download and the install.
That's good.
And I find that now you can get a pristine download file that I can load on another computer if I want. Or I can load it back on this computer if I do have a problem and it gets wiped out.
Or you can just, yeah, you can do that. And, or just take yourself a really nice image, you know, like with a Cronus or something, and store that ISO or that image file. And then you just put that image right back
now,
on.
Let's
and it's
stop
quick.
There.
It's very quick.
We've talked about this before. Yeah. A Cronus is a piece of software, right, Ed?
Yes.
That you can use to make an image. Just quickly, what is an image and what is that?
Well, it takes an entire, it's an image or an exact replica of your hard drive
everything
or
on the hard
of your drive. Computer and stores it into a single file on an external device or CD. And then you use that same Acronis software, which usually provides the ability to create a bootable CD like Microsoft or a bootable flash drive. And then you can use that to then restore that image or that mirror copy back onto your computer.
So, and does it cost anything?
Yes.
How much?
I think, well, is Acronis still free for individual consumers?
For the home user, you can use it the one time, yeah. But it won't let you, I think it won't let you browse the network. You have to put it on a thumb drive, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have an external storage for that image. And that's because most people, like corporate people, use the network for those images, and they block that. It's not horribly expensive, though. It really isn't. But it's a good piece of software to use.
And it's spelled A-C-R-O-N-I-S, Acronis. There you go. And
good piece of software.
So people should get it, run off an image or two every couple weeks?
Well, you could use Acronis, but Windows 7 and Windows 8 also allow you the ability to create an image of your computer now.
Right.
So Acronis, although you could still do it, and I still prefer the interface and the flexibility that Acronis provides, Windows 7 and 8 also provides you the same ability to make an exact duplicate of your computer and then put it on an external device.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that way you can use the Windows 7 or 8 recovery CD or DVD to restore your image back.
Well, I'm looking at it looks like $50 for one computer.
It's a great piece of software. We use it. We try to redo our images every, you know, month or so.
But for the folks who are out there who want it,
having that is better than nothing, trust me.
Yes, exactly. And you said, Eddie, and it's very good, is that that Microsoft built that property into Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 now as well.
And you can use
not as powerful, not as flexible, but it does what it's supposed to do with Microsoft tools anyways.
Very good. Yeah, okay, let's talk about one of the questions that came in was from Irina, somebody we've worked with here at WJR, our flagship station. And she said, I received confirmation from Google's tech support that my MacBook Pro, which is about a 2013 model, my iPhone 5S, and an iPad Air, first generation, had almost been infected with numerous viruses through my home ISP. It's interesting that they would say it was almost infected. Mm-hmm. That sounds a little strange. Anybody?
Well, if you're infected, it's too late.
It's like being almost pregnant. Yeah. You either are or you aren't.
But they said you dodged one, you don't count on dodging the next one.
Well,
maybe
that was it.
It also sounds like that this might be a phishing scheme
from
someone that's trying to masquerade as Google, saying, you know, you were almost infected in your Android account.
So therefore,
disregard it.
That's exactly what it was.
Right, exactly.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. When I saw that description of what had happened there, I thought, oh, Irina, that doesn't sound straight. To have somebody say you were almost infected sounds like this thing. But fortunately, we have this software to sell you, and this software will make sure that never happens to you again.
It is getting so crazy out there, guys. And listen, from someone who is out there in the front lines every day.
We should mention, by the way, that you have a shop that you go to every day,
yep.
Comtech Services in Sterling Heights.
I fight this every day. It is insane.
He has all these wounds, I guarantee you.
You wouldn't believe it, how bad it is going right now. I mean, it almost makes me sometimes think, boy, are we destroying the internet?
Yes, it does. Yeah,
I mean,
it gets
like,
so
is
bad.
Because I've got customers that come in every single week that have the same thing happen to them over and over again.
Oh, ouch.
So why is that?
You know what? No matter how many times I can tell them, hey, don't open your brother's email, or don't click on this link in Facebook, or don't go to Google and search for so-and-so. I mean, I can only tell them so many times, but it's not clicking with a lot of people.
Okay.
You know, they're used to the internet going and getting all this information. Now I slap their hand and say, you can't do that anymore. Well, what good is the internet then? That's what I get.
So, Arena, we would suggest to you, be careful anytime you get that kind of thing. And essentially, your Macs are pretty bulletproof in many ways to a lot of malware. However, there's a Clam XAV that Cal and I use, and it is very good for taking care of the malware that is out there. Back in just a second. Welcome back. It's hour number two of the Internet Advisor. And in just a little bit, we're going to be talking with Emily Hay, who is our social media expert. She's be getting in touch with us. We're going to be talking about a question we had that was sent to us by Greg this last week about learning how to use some of this social media. And we'll get back to that in just a second. I want to wrap up something. We were talking about Irina, and we were talking about her question about how to protect a Mac. And I mentioned the fact that it's pretty well protected to start with, but Clam XAV is a good piece of software they have, and that's what I have in mind. I also use, there's a number of other ones you can use, but basically you need to be very careful. And I think I think all of you guys would agree with this. The main thing is just to be wise consumers and keep your eye out when something like this happens that you say, well, you almost got, no.
Well, it's as simple as this. They're never take a phone call regarding your computer at all, ever.
Right.
Hang up immediately. Have fun with them, tease them, hang up, do whatever you got to do. It's never going to be Microsoft. It's never going to be Google. That's false. It's easy to remember.
Right.
It really is.
And then the other
thing, and if you really think something might be legit, say, great. Get off the phone with them, call that company.
Right.
Right. And then if there's something that you really need to do, then you get back on the phone with them, right? But you call them.
Yeah. But
accept a phone call. And that should be whether it's about the internet or anything. Right?
And then I say anything that asks you for your passwords or anything else like that through an email, et cetera, done. That's a hoax as well. Well, hey, we have Emily Hay with us here now, our lady of the social media. How you doing, Emily?
I'm good. Hey there, Foster. Hey, guys. How are you today?
Hey there, Foster. Okay.
We're teasing.
It never gets old.
We're teasing.
Because Emily's company is Hey There.
Hey there, social media. I'm glad you got that in.
Thanks.
Emily, we had a question that came in for a gentleman named Greg. And here was his question. Do you know of any classes in LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter? And he says, I have all three, and trial and error has made a disorganized mess of my system here, and I'd like to straighten things out in advance. What would you offer as a cure for somebody like this, or a way of helping them?
Sure. So one of the best organizations we have here in town is Social Media Club Detroit.
Ah.
And they offer regular meetings, so there's always going to be social media professionals that get together and talk about things going on in the industry. But the meetings are at various venues that even if you're a brand newbie to social media and you just want to get some advice, you can go. I'm looking at their Facebook page now, and they have been hosting various educational sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to, I'm sure you can link to them through the Internet Advisor site.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you send us that link, and then what we'll do is we'll post that on our homepage so people can get that. That's really neat. Now, do you think that they have other branches, let's say, in Western Michigan or throughout the area?
That's a good point. Yes, absolutely. So Social Media Club is a national organization.
Ah.
So, yes, I would say that I should know that off the top of my head. But
that's okay.
Yeah, there would be various regions that would have Social Media Club. But again, don't be intimidated. You know, someone that's just getting started that thinks, oh, I'm not a professional in the field, just go to those sessions, and they offer all kinds of help. And remember, it's free, or at least very low cost, but most of the time they're free gatherings.
And it's a socialmediaclub.org. And when you get there, you can look for different locations that they will have throughout the United States. Yep. And I like the business that you can be a newbie and that you can find a level of interaction there. You don't have to feel like, oh, gee, I'm just too dumb to do this. But that's a great place to go.
Right. So that's something that happens in the community. Now, don't forget about Meetup. If you go to meetup.com, you might search just whatever you're looking for, LinkedIn, help or LinkedIn trainings. Oh. I mean, I know I used to personally lead some LinkedIn sessions at the community house in Birmingham here in Southeast Michigan. Mm. So generally any community center or, you know, local place you can take classes might have some social media courses for you to go to just informally. But otherwise, yeah, check out Meetup. There might be some groups around your neighborhood.
So Meetup, it's M-E-E-T-Up. .com. And it's for all different kinds of groups?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, wow. Meetup.com is a significant platform. I mean, you could find everything from wine enthusiasts to social media enthusiasts. So just look and see what's out there.
So, Emily, how does it work? Let's see, if I'm in Lansing and I go to Meetup.com, I'll find it. It'll then show me what's going on in the Lansing area, right?
You can type in your interest or what you're looking to find. Remember, Meetup is just it's a hub to gather people together around various topics. So there could be a group of people that talk about LinkedIn every Tuesday at 7 o'clock that you don't even know about happening down the street.
You know, Gary, I know that you've used LinkedIn for a long time. Was it mainly for professional or business kind of?
Yeah, I mean, mainly it's business oriented, right? Where, you know, Facebook is both, but primarily, you know, friends and family and whatnot.
And Emily,
Twitter's about both. Really.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I it seems to me, and see if you can confirm this or not, that LinkedIn is now making a move to be more than just a business professional kind of a gathering place.
Does anything jump out to you that's made you think
that? I'm not sure that's the case, but tell me why.
Well, because, you know, for instance, there are groups you can, you know, if you're interested in podcasting, mm-hmm. you can become part of a podcast group, or it's more than...
But it's not basket weaving groups.
That's true. It's
right?
Still professional.
It's still professional.
Oh, still that's the issue. It's still professional. I gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And remember, when you're a member of a LinkedIn group, generally that group has a logo that will show up on your profile, so it's kind of a neat way for someone to show at a glance in their LinkedIn profile what groups they're a part of.
So, you know, it could be your school. I have a couple alumni associations.
Oh, really?
And then it could be other groups that I'm interested in. I have an affinity for, you know, executives in banking or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But there's, or my company, there's some company groups. I actually have a group we call the Baker's Dozen. And it's about career networking. So.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
We got almost 600 people in,
wow,
in the group.
Emily, any special things going on over at Hey There Social Media?
Yeah, I mean, we've been plugging along, looking for, you know, all things that are happening as we get closer towards the summer season here. Social media just keeps on going. But, no, it's funny. We just continue to look through social media and see it's integrated with digital marketing. And, you know, we personally are, as I said, social media experts. Mm-hmm. But SEO and content marketing, and there's just so many things under the digital marketing umbrella that I think we are talking about things more than just social media. And before it was just, all you need to worry about is your Facebook page and have a really great blog. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, no, you have to look at your digital marketing strategy holistically.
Yep.
And I know I'm only scratching the surface on that sort of discussion. But, I guess what I would say is instead of having a narrow focus on I should be using social media, maybe, you know, I encourage small business owners to take a step back and say, well, where else are you marketing? And if you are just thinking a Facebook page is enough, that's not going to cut it.
Mm. By the way, part of the reason I asked Emily that question is that we've been talking about, as Greg was asking, where can you go to find out about social media for the, you know, the user, the general user out there. But if you have a business, places or companies like Hey There Social Media are a great place to go to help you, you know, get a leg up on the competition, if you will. Get more out of social media than just, you know, kind of like gathering together with friends. This is where you can really make your business work through this as well. And that's where Emily and her colleagues are so good at that. Emily, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks, Foster. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you for being here. Emily Hay, our social media expert. Thank you with HeyThereSocialMedia.com. Okay, guys, let's see. What's some of the other questions we had
here? You know, I had one for Shane here. I had a user that actually, and I am, this is out of the blue here.
Uh-oh.
And he basically says that he's trying to do a Windows update, and I could not help him over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the update continues to fail. With... and I gave him a number of troubleshooting steps. Mm-hmm. Microsoft provided a fix-it that, if you will, that will supposedly fix the problem.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is to go to your software distributions folder underneath your Windows and delete the contents of that. Do a scan disk and a check disk, because there's something going on here. And I also asked them to look up that specific error, which had to do typically with, you know, date and time. Mm-hmm. Is your date and time matching perfectly to what the internet time machine is?
Mm.
And other than that, he says, no, I still get this error.
Did he check his date and time?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He swears he did.
You know, the Windows update errors are kind of goofy to me, because you'll get the error code. You know, it'll tell you why it didn't go through.
Yep.
And you'll put that in, you know, your browser, and you'll find a bunch of things. And you literally have to go through all those to find it. I mean, the fix, Microsoft puts out the fix-it,
yep,
you know, files.
Well, by the way, just explain what a fix-it is.
A fix-it file is pretty much, instead of you going in and following all these steps to go into your regedit and change all this, they did it for, they did an executable.
It'd be kind of neat, yeah.
An executable regedit is what they did for you. And they do it for you.
They got tired of writing all those damn instructions, yeah, is what it was.
But you know, I find a lot of times,
why don't
you
just code this?
I had one just this recently, and it would constantly roll back and roll back, and I was able to find a fix for it, and it was just literally taking the Norton uninstaller, the program that uninstalls Norton, instead, yeah, of doing it through the Windows version, grabbing the uninstaller tool through Norton, that took care of the updates.
You really?
Know, making sure all your antivirus is fully uninstalled.
Yep, and I saw that on the list. I did not think, you know, I'll write them back and ask them.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Shane. When we come back, I want to go through that list again.
Yeah.
I want to thank the guys here in studio who have been helping us. Mr. Gary Baker, of course, Ed Rudell, and Shane Hamlin.
Yes, yes.
And that trio will be back next week as well to help answer questions. And the man behind the sound effects is Mr. Rich Lozinski. Thank you very much. Okay, Shane, we had a question, or Ed, you had talked about a question about fixing a Windows update problem. It kept happening again.
Right. And I went through my toolkit of standard answers and things that I've done, and Shane came up with another one that I was really hesitant to, you know, I don't know if I want to ask him to do that. Why don't you explain it?
The Norton,
because that seems sort of drastic, and I know we don't badmouth them, but sometimes we're like, Norton uses up so much resources. Maybe you should try to use the standard Microsoft antivirus.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't use as much resources. Norton is a good antivirus program, but sometimes antivirus programs can interfere.
Well, they'll block a lot of stuff, you know, firewall stuff. And what I like to do is, whenever I'm troubleshooting a computer, there's a few things that I always do. First thing is, I strip out all antivirus. And I don't just go through the uninstall method through Windows. I actually will go and grab the actual utility from the company. You know, AVG has an uninstall tool.
Right.
McAfee does. Mm-hmm. And I'll grab that, and I'll run that as administrator, and I will strip everything out of that machine. That's the first thing I do. Then I'll go through and, you know, you do all your temp files and your C cleaners, and you clean out all your temps. So you want to really, while you're troubleshooting, you want to start and make sure you have a clean, healthy computer.
Yep.
Once you have that, then you can start troubleshooting, and go from there.
Because
if you're not, you know, it's
that's just a very good start to it. And then you can add some of these other things on that we've been talking about.
So my family teases me because I have 3 laptops plus my iPad are sitting at my desk, right? And they're going, you know, you really need them all? I said, well, this one's a Win 8.1. This one's Win 7. This is my office computer. I can't put anything on that. And experiment for the show and other things. So, you know, they're all for different purposes, right?
Exactly.
I had a problem downloading the latest Windows update, right? And all I did was shut off my antivirus.
Yeah.
And
hit
it again, and it came down.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, and then I turn it right back on again, right? You've got to make sure that you turn it back on.
By the way, I've heard that
some antiviruses, you have the ability to disable for the next 30 minutes, an hour, or next reboot, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So always try right mouse clicking on the antivirus icon, because it may provide that feature. Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point, Gary. Thank you.
One of the things I've heard a number of times over the last few weeks, it's this whole business about time and date not being set properly. And why is that? We're hearing that more and more often. You know, anybody have any ideas why that happens?
Is it the battery? Because usually it's the battery, right?
Yeah, sometimes the virus will do that too.
Oh.
So you can't run your antivirus. You can't run these programs. And you'll never notice it unless you look down and go, oh, it's not 2000.
A virus that actually targets that? Yeah. No way.
Yeah.
That's
getting
tricky.
Smarter.
That makes sense.
And you'll look down and go, well, it's not 2000.
I have another listener
42.
That actually replaced his battery.
Yeah.
And it... The darn thing still loses time. He'd be sitting there, and all of a sudden the time changes.
But the virus is the one. That's right. If it changes the time,
it can't get updates.
Can't get updates.
Can't download virus signatures.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Shane. Wow.
Thank you. That is really that you've answered the question about why we're seeing so much
of
this right now.
There are tricky viruses out there.
They're
all right, Ed. Let's talk about some of the other questions we've had come in here this last week. Go ahead.
No, I know you want to. We were talking about these viruses, and we'll get to you in 1 second. But I think it would be a really good idea one day if we on the show actually infected ourselves with this crypto virus.
Ooh.
And went through the steps of calling them on the air and getting the whole and seeing what happens and do you get your files back or do you not and listening to the script and the whole thing.
Could you bring in a computer that we could do that with? Because I don't want
to
do it.
No,
mine.
But I mean, we can do it to any computer. Just as long as we hit the clean slate, we can just always wipe it out. But I'd really, to record it for the people so they hear it and know exactly what's going on. Yeah. Would be a great idea.
Yeah. It's gotten pretty sophisticated.
I like stepping in front of traffic too.
On two-lane highways where I can see clearly in both directions, not on expressways.
That doesn't sound exciting to me, Shane, but I'm glad you get into it. No, that'd be great.
I'd look over your shoulder while you do it on your computer. Yeah.
No, we'll do it. Wow. Sounds great.
There are companies that do that, and they will do that precisely so that they can catch the bad guys at it. Do any of you watch CSI Cyber? Have any of you watched that?
I don't watch much TV.
So.
I've watched two episodes of that. Have you watched it?
A little bit. I see it here and there, and I catch a little bit here and there.
Kind of interesting.
Is it good? Yeah.
So I'm not quite sold on it yet, but it's interesting. And one of the things they talk about a lot is the deep web. And we did a show on that. Remember then?
Yep.
This is maybe about 6 months ago, that there's another level of communication that's going on beyond the internet that we all see, and that there are ways of kind of getting down to that. It's there. It's there on the computers that we use, only if you have to have
the
ways
the browser, like with the Purple Onion or Black Onion, the browser that opens that up for you.
Yeah.
And basically, you have to have the encryption keys, if you will, to get into the Emerald City, so to be able to access the content. So you have to have, basically you're running a virtual VPN server that scrambles your data, so it's difficult to find out where you're going on the internet. It's all masked. So they have no way of telling where they know you're hitting it. They just have no idea where you're going.
But they're on the same internet we're on.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same pipe.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's just a different network, virtual network, if you would.
Right. And it's not using HTTP. It's using something else.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
So if you were to use a browser, it would be something not HTTP. What is it? I think it's Tor, T-O-R-E.
Oh, yeah, T-O-R. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So just like you use for an FTP or file transfer protocol site, FTP, right? When it used to be...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right? When it used to be Gopher, there used to be Gopher. You'd have Gopher.
Oh,
dot,
and I see.
Then we came to the web, you could use HTTP, right? Slash, colon, slash, slash, and then whatever URL, right?
And the WWW was
World Wide Web.
World Wide Web.
Right.
Different than, say, a mail program, which would be SMTP.
Ah, okay.
Right?
So where is the deep web in that? Protocol. It's not on the HTTP?
No, it's not on HTTP, but it's on the same internet, same pipe, but you use a different protocol to get to it. You get used TOR.
Yeah,
we don't want to teach everybody how to do this.
But I'm connecting to it now, and it will actually connect to the Tor network.
Right.
With the browser.
And that's the torrent network?
No, it's just Tor network. It's a separate language code for internet protocol that they're using to descript this.
Yeah. We don't want to send anybody to the deep web, but I was fascinated to see more and more talk on it, like in this program, about the deep web and things that are there are drugs and all sorts of other strange things that are being sold there and things like that. Yeah. Matter of fact, the Silk Road was one of those ones that was shut down. And credit cards, exactly. Now, Ed, before, I got to find out what you helped the person who has wanted to know and sent us an email about Binkyland and wanted to know how to get rid of it.
Well, basically, Malwarebytes will identify it and install it. But Binkyland is an application, but I told her, Binkyland is an application that allows you to do gaming on the internet. And she mentioned in one of her earlier emails that she enjoys playing with someone else on the internet in their games. And this program wasn't working anymore. So I told her that, yes, you could probably, it's probably on there and monitoring everything you do on the internet, but it's also allowing you to play games.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to find a legitimate type of way of playing card games on the internet and Yahtzee and anything else, rather than Binkyland.
Binkyland?
Yeah.
Have you heard of it at all, Shane, no, being a gamer?
I'm a gamer, but I'm not a Binkyland gamer. But, yeah, there's tons of places you can go for free games.
Well, that's just it. I mean, some of our older listeners like to play Yahtzee and things like that.
Pogo's a big one.
Pogo.
Pogo's, okay. Very safe. You can, buy your subscription. It's a couple bucks a month. Play all the games you want so you're blue in the face. Okay. Now, they require you to always update your Java because it's a Java-based platform, but it's easy to do.
And it's P-O-G-O,
P-O-G-O, right? Yep, pogo.com.
Okay, pogo.com. And Binkyland was one of those gaming kind of stuff.
I think so. And basically, okay. I said use the Malwarebytes to remove it, go into add, remove programs, and then, if you want to, go out there and find a legitimate gaming.
All right, and hope that helped you. By the way, folks, if you would like to get some help, it's very simple. Go to internetadvisor.net, click on the Contact Us button, and then send us an email with your question. And if you're in the Detroit area and you can catch it, or throughout northern Indiana and Ohio as well, and into southwestern Ontario, from 5 until 6 o'clock, you can also hear us on WJR as well and get your questions in there. Or we'll see you at internetadvisor.net. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.